Hi, welcome to Whiskey Cast, the Cask Strength podcast featuring news and interviews from the world of whiskey. I'm Mark Gillespie. This is episode number 108 for September 9th, 2007. Coming up in a few minutes.
You know, it's the same concept, but it's a pretty different situation from working with a pot still that's 100 gallons and mashing, you know, in a 120-gallon barrel and, you know, and doing all that like they did. It's pretty different from what these guys experience in their normal jobs.
That's Dr. Dennis Pogue, not a whiskey maker, but a historian at Mount Vernon, George Washington's estate just outside Washington, D.C., and the site of the largest whiskey distillery in the early United States. Last week, several of the nation's leading distillers spent the week at Mount Vernon firing up the stills at the restored distillery. More from Mount Vernon later, but first, let's look at the news. First, an update on our main story from last week. The funeral service for Michael Jackson will be held this coming Friday. Michael died August 30th at the age of 65. His funeral will be a private service for family and close friends, but a public memorial is in the works for later this year. I'll keep you posted. Last month, in episode number 104, I mentioned that Isle of Arran released a special single malt to honor retiring distillery manager Gordon Mitchell. At his retirement party this past Tuesday, there was another surprise for Gordon. Arran Distilleries Managing Director Douglas Davidson announced that Arran's new maturation warehouse will be known as the Gordon Mitchell Warehouse. Gordon ran the distillery for the last 12 years. And last week, I mentioned that Jimmy Russell of Wild Turkey leaked out word of a new Russell's Reserve Rye whiskey during a tasting event for reporters at Mount Vernon. Now the details are available. Russell's Reserve Rye will be available in selected U.S. markets starting next month. It's a 6-year-old small batch rye, specially selected by Jimmy and his son Eddie, and will be bottled at 45% ABV. Meanwhile, Four Roses will be releasing a special single-barrel bourbon this coming week during the Kentucky Bourbon Festival. The bottling honors master distiller Jim Rutledge's 40 years in the distilling business. 1,700 bottles will be available in Kentucky and New York. Four Roses will also unveil new packaging for its Yellow Label bourbon this week at the festival in Bardstown. Four Roses also plans to expand sales later this year into Illinois, New Jersey, and Tennessee. Speaking of the Bourbon Festival, Maker's Mark has opened its new visitor's center at the distillery in Loretto, just down the road from Bardstown, and just in time for the festival. I'll have more on that with master distiller Dave Pickerell on the next episode of Whiskey Cast, along with word of a wild weekend in Las Vegas later this year. Last week, I mentioned Springbank Distillery's plans to hold a series of whiskey schools this fall in Campbelltown. Veteran distiller Frank McCarty won last year's Malt Advocate Lifetime Achievement Award, and he'll be the headmaster for the Springbank Whiskey Schools.
Well, we call them not classes, we call them terms, like a school term. And the school term is to run for Monday through to Friday, and we are doing 6 of these terms from 1st of October onwards.
What started the idea behind doing the school at Springbank?
Well, I think that we have been approached by many people regarding coming to work at Springbank. And as you probably know, we carry out 100% of the total process to turn a barley into bottles of whiskey. And it just so happens that there is a 6-week period during October to mid-November this year when all these processes are carried out all at the same time. It doesn't often happen. So people can come and have education in malting of barley, in the production, and then in the bottling after that as well. So everything is going on at the same time.
And they'll actually be doing some of the work, correct?
They are going to be employed. They are going to attend the school. They will be on a hands-on basis with a one-to-one instruction on the work processes with an operator, one of our mashmen, Stillman. They will also have lectures during the week where they'll be lectured for an hour at each time, not too long, on malting, also on production, and then on how to assess casks of whiskey as far as the taste of the whiskey is concerned, the nosing. Actually, a big whiskey tasting. So production and whiskey tasting, lectures on that, plus malting.
And I would imagine there'll be a lot of hands-on tasting experience.
Well, there certainly will be during the day that the whiskey tasting is set up. Yeah.
What else is going to make this unique? This is a rare chance to really get to see what goes on inside Springbank, right?
It is, and not many people have had the chance or the opportunity to come to Springbank. I mean, there are other people who actually do whiskey schools, but the point is that Springbank has always been so private, it hasn't really encouraged this before. So I think people coming here will have the unique experience of working in the oldest continuously family-owned distillery in Scotland, which is a big attraction.
And as you mentioned, Springbank has been very private until now.
Mm-hmm.
Why open things up now?
Why? Because, again, we are being approached by lots of people, especially from our importers in various countries, to send their people across for education. We're quite happy to do that, but we think at the end of the day also there is obviously a bit of revenue to be made by doing this, and people are quite keen to come and work for us and pay for the privilege.
I was about to ask that, because I know talking with some other folks at other distilleries who have done this, they're surprised at just how many people are willing to pay you to come work for you for a few days.
Yeah, and we especially, again, Mark, going back to the fact that we have always remained under control of the same family since 1828. So, you know, it's quite rare to find an independent, totally independent distillery. Our present chairman is a great, great grandson of the original founder. So, you know, that's a big attraction too.
Let's go through the nuts and bolts. How much does it cost, and who do people want to contact?
Well, they want to contact me. They can go online and look up the whiskey school, if you like. You know, it's not a problem there. You can find that through. Well, I'm trying to find the website that I'm looking just now.
I have a link to it on our website.
Oh, you have a link to it. Yeah. Well, you've got everything there. Then you've also got the actual costs involved there as well. 800 and what is it? I've got to look this up. That's terrible, isn't it? £875. That's what it costs people. But in that cost, as I say, they're getting all the work instruction. They're also getting the lectures, the knowledge, and they're also getting dinner, bed, and breakfast from Sunday night right through to Friday morning, plus a lunch on the Friday, plus their packed lunches each day. So they're doing okay. We compare quite favorably in cost with other people that's doing the same thing.
How many people are you taking for each class?
Ah, there's the nub. Yeah, only six for each. Only six for each term. We're trying to put them all up in the same bed and breakfast establishment, so they're all together, and it's quite a pleasant place, you know, and it's not far from the distillery, and they get all their food there as well. And it's quite easy also to get to the pubs from there, too, if they fancy that.
Oh, of course. I can't imagine people wouldn't fancy going to the pub after spending the day at the distillery.
Oh, I'm sure they would. Yeah, I'm sure they do. We have lots of pubs in Campbelltown. You know, at one time in Campbelltown, there used to be about 20-odd distilleries. You know, now we've got three. But, yeah, it's an interesting place.
And how many people have you already signed up, or do you want to say that yet?
We have got 9 at present. The first week threw up 9 people immediately.
Great.
Yeah.
So it'll hopefully fill up fast, so people should get in touch with you quickly.
Well, yeah, we were a bit late in launching it this year, but definitely next year. I mean, people know about it now. We've had interest for next year already, and people have come back and asked us if we're doing it at any other time. Well, we may consider also doing it in the spring next year, which is about April, May time.
Again, you'll find a link to the Springbank School's website at the WhiskeyCast website, and you'll find all of the sessions on the calendar of events. Speaking of Springbank, Caden Heads in Amsterdam will hold a Springbank weekend on the 15th. That same day, the Oscar Goetz Museum in Bardstown will hold its annual Master Distillers Auction as part of the Kentucky Bourbon Festival. The Whiskey by the Sea Festival runs from the 17th through the 23rd in the Dutch town of Vlissingen. On September 20th, the Brandy Library in New York City will hold a charity whiskey tasting to benefit the Max Rieger Foundation's music education programs. That same day, the Stockholm Beer and Whiskey Festival kicks off its first weekend of action, and the 23rd brings the start of the Autumn Speyside Whiskey Festival in Dufftown and the Brooklyn Bourbon Festival at Linnell's in New York City. Finally, McTeers in Glasgow will hold an auction of rare whiskeys and wines on September 28th. Believe it or not, that's just the start of a very busy fall, and you'll find the complete calendar of events at the WhiskeyCast website. The address is www.whiskeycast.com. Americans are taught from an early age that George Washington was the father of our country. But one of the things the teachers never mentioned was George's place in whiskey history. In fact, after he left the presidency and returned to Mount Vernon in Virginia, one of his estate managers talked him into setting up a distillery.
Most distilleries in Virginia have one still. If you have a pretty decent operation, you've got two. Take a look around. Washington's got a bottle. Okay? So when he decides he's going to make whiskey, he's not just going to do it halfway, he's going to jump into it. In 1798, he made almost 4,000 gallons of whiskey. By 1799, he's making 11,000 gallons of whiskey. All right? That puts you in a, again, top tier there. As far as distilleries in the United States, we know Washington is probably the largest in Virginia. And he's probably the largest in the U.S. He's in the top three in the U.S.
That's one of the tour guides at the restored distillery, which opened to the public earlier this year. Dr. Dennis Pogue is one of the historians at Mount Vernon.
Well, historians knew that Washington had operated a distillery, but basically nobody else had. Back in the 30s, when this site was first developed by the state of Virginia, they actually did some excavations here, and they exposed the foundation of the distillery, and they had plans at that time to reconstruct it, but they ran out of money. And so it really went onto the back burner until Mount Vernon got involved about 70 years later.
And so the ruins just sort of sat here by the grist mill?
Well, the original building burned in 1814, and it was never rebuilt. And the foundation stones and everything was taken away and salvaged for other purposes. So the building was gone from 1814 and until we reconstructed the new version a couple of years ago.
But there were some remains left here where they could find at least the remnants of the old foundation?
Well, there was nothing on the surface, but what the archaeologists did was dig down, did what archaeologists do, and were able to actually trace the whole foundation of the building. A lot of the stones still survived, and even where they didn't survive, we could see where they had been. We found the basis for all the stills, and that consisted of brick remnants of the bottoms of the furnaces and red and burned soils, you know, where that had been located. We also found drains under the floor. They had to bring water into the building as part of the distilling process and then needed to get that, you know, back out. So the underground drains still survived. We also found portions of the different floor areas where the mashing occurred, where the distilling operation occurred. So there was a whole variety of archaeological clues that helped us to understand the building.
So this is about as close as you could realistically get to recreating the environment.
Oh, I think so. And the archaeology, of course, is important. And then we were very fortunate in that we have lots and lots of documentary records. So those consist not only of Washington's writings, where he describes the operation and talks about various issues, but we also have ledgers that capture the financial transactions.
Speaking of finances, in a time when money for many cultural projects is tight, the Distilled Spirits Council of the United States stepped in to raise more than $2 million to cover the cost of restoring the distillery.
Obviously couldn't have done it without them. But also on the other side, not just the money side, but, you know, making a lot of this happen and putting us in touch with all of these master distillers. We've had the benefit of having, you know, well-known distillers from Maker's Mark and Brown-Forman and George Dickel and all around the industry have donated their time to come out here and work with us on this project to help us understand what it was like, you know, to work through sort of the intricacies of what distilling was like a couple hundred years ago.
Last week, distillers from Wild Turkey, Maker's Mark, George Dickel, and nearby Virginia Gentleman spent the week working the stills to produce rye whiskey from George Washington's original recipe. Gerald Webb works with George Dickel and Diageo's other U.S. distilleries.
How much fun was it to come out here this week and make whiskey from a 200-some-year-old recipe.
It was a lot of fun. We are trying to rediscover techniques that were used a couple of hundred years ago and basically are totally foreign to what we actually do today to produce the same thing. The steps are the same, but the level of technology is much, much lower. So it's been a real blast to come out here and try to figure out how these guys did it 200 years ago.
Did you figure it out, you think?
We're getting there. We've, like Dave was saying, we've done better, and we will do better in the future. But we think that we have locked down pretty much most of what they were doing.
How hard was it to figure out at least the process? You knew at least the chemical process, but in terms of going from your large size stills down to a 100-gallon pot still,
it's a lot more physical. The cooking is totally different, and just simply having to manhandle the ingredients and the materials, it was a much more physical process than we're used to doing. Plus, you have things like you're handling boiling water with wooden containers, where we would use a pump. So it was very interesting learning how to do some of this stuff.
By the way, the guides at the distillery wear traditional costumes, and in past visits to work the stills, the guys have had to dress up as well. But this time, with August temperatures well above 90 degrees, and a historically accurate distillery that features no air conditioning, they dressed for comfort and not historical accuracy. But in a place that is devoted to teaching history, there is still plenty for Dave Pickerel of Maker's Mark to learn here.
I learned that that there's always more to learn. every step of the way, we try to take a step farther back in time, and we're trying to do less and less things artificially, and to get to the point where it's truly the way it was, and everything from making sure you got the right amount of grind in your grain to the right sterilization process to how you handle the woods for the fermenters when you're not using them, how they lay up, and all the sterilization steps you go through before you get started really set your feet right for making the stuff in the first place.
How helpful was the documentation, or at least the archival records that they had here?
Everything is important. It wasn't just the archival information here. It was digging out old practical distillers from bygone days, and talking with the old folks and a lot of it truly was, a few years back when we made the first batch, was we knew what the tools looked like, we knew the general concept, but it was just getting in there and doing it and looking at it and going, oh, now I understand. When you put it in like this and you hit it with hot water and it turns gray, it's scalded. And just things like that. And until you actually get in there and do it, then the light comes on and it makes sense.
Because this is obviously different from what you do at Maker's Mark.
It is, as Jerry said earlier. It's intense in terms of the manual labor. From bucketing water all over the place to getting the temperatures adjusted by hand to packing around bags full of grain every step of the way. Getting it from the mash tub from the fermenter into the still, it's a bucket brigade. I mean, every step of the way, it's just incredibly manual.
Okay, what happens now? Because this whiskey's going to sit for a while.
Well, what happens now is I think the next thing that we really need to do is we need to formalize it. We need to build an operations manual for this place. Because at some point in time, we've got to turn this over to local staff. And so we were talking about just earlier today that it's about time to put pen to paper and just start documenting our learnings and the physical steps and the reminders of don't forget to do this and don't forget to do that, and remember that we've got to make this into a semi-commercial distillery because they've got a certain quantity they need to have every year to sell at the gift gallery.
It took a special act of the Virginia legislature to allow whiskey made at the distillery to be sold at the Mount Vernon gift shops. And Dennis Pogue says there are still some legal loopholes to be closed before the first whiskey goes on sale next spring.
We never intended to become distillers. Mount Vernon, we deal in history, and lots of folks out there make a lot of good alcohol, and we felt we didn't really need to get into that business. So the plan here always was to essentially show people what it was like 200 years ago and demonstrate the process. So, when you come, you see the mashing, you know, see all the steps that it takes to prepare. Then you see the stills in operation and all that. But we don't distill alcohol on a daily basis. And our plan, you know, from now on is to distill, you know, small amounts on special occasions for special purposes. And what we have found is that folks are just real intrigued to know what George Washington's whiskey tasted like. It's pretty different from what most people drink today. So we think that there's a market, you know, for us to sell, you know, small bottles, basically, you know, commemorative, you know, items, so that people can take that home with them as a keepsake and also have an opportunity to taste what alcohol was, you know, what whiskey was like in George Washington's time.
And plow money back into Mount Vernon for restoration for other projects and upkeep, right?
Absolutely. You know, we're an expensive operation. It costs money to keep up the distillery and to operate this. So certainly it's a revenue stream that we're happy to have as well.
The distillery will close for the winter next month and reopen in April. If you're traveling along the U.S. East Coast, Mount Vernon is located about 10 miles from downtown Washington, D.C. in Alexandria, Virginia, just off U.S. Highway 1. Of course, you'll find links at the WhiskeyCast website. That's all for this episode of WhiskeyCast. My email address for questions and suggestions is comments@WhiskeyCast.com, and I'd love to hear from you. WhiskeyCast is a production of MG Media, copyright 2007, and comes to you from the charming, almost as historic, and regrettably dry town of Haddonfield, New Jersey. I'm Mark Gillespie, reminding you that when you drink, please drink responsibly. Thanks for listening.